Welcome to Conversations with Achievers. I'm your host, Robert White. I'm a mentor to owners, executives, and their teams, and CEO of Extraordinary People, LLC. I work with people that want to create extraordinary business performance with less stress, more joy, and more personal fulfillment. So sit back, relax, and prepare to learn from your peers as we explore what it takes in terms of attitudes, habits, and behaviors that achieve extraordinary results. Results for yourself, for your family, and your community. Hello, Robert White here, and it's time for another conversation with Achievers. And our guest today is David Hewitt. David has a fascinating background and a complexity that I both admire and think I probably couldn't do myself. So that's always interesting to learn from somebody that's working in that kind of environment. David, hello there.
Hey, Robert. Hey, thanks for having me.
It's my great pleasure. One of the things I noticed about you is that I have a bunch of children. Two are adopted, and one of them has your hair color. And it's always fascinating to me because people assume, they don't assume he's adopted. And then they'll tell me how much he looks like me. But why don't you have red hair? He has red hair like yours. And it's been a family joke forever that I'm Irish in terms of heritage. But the red hair thing skipped one generation, and that's me. Hey, thank you so much for doing this. My listeners are interested in people that are up to something, and you certainly are. Tell us a little bit about your journey and how you've put together and assumed the responsibility for a complex series of companies or a number of companies.
Yeah, I would say when I started my career, I didn't have a master plan. But I did have a lot of drive and I was ambitious, and I was able to get an elevated position in the organization pretty early on in my career. And so I didn't set out with the goal of being a CEO. I just set out with the goal of just constantly doing better. My upbringing was a very competitive upbringing. I went to British boarding school. I played a lot of sports. And so that naturally infused in me just a competitive spirit and a will to win and will to be better. So I think that's what drove me in the beginning. But certainly once I tasted that general management experience, which I had early on in my career when I was out in China doing a startup, I caught the bug. There's no better job than kind of leading an organization, taking care of your employees, your customers, and growing the business. So after getting a general manager experience in China doing a startup, which I don't recommend for everybody, it takes a lot of time and takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot out of you. But certainly I learned a lot about being a general manager very early in my career in a very tough environment, and that propelled me and set me up for the rest of my career. So from there, I did various leadership roles in private equity and publicly traded companies in Asia, in North America, which leads me up to where I am today. I'm the CEO of Hyperion Solutions. We manufacture and distribute components that go into elevators, and we support those products through the life cycle. I report directly into a private equity, and it's a great company, and I'm loving it.
That's great. What years were you in China?
2007 to 2012. So it's changed a bit. It was changing even while I was there. It was quite miraculous to see that the pace had changed while I was there.
I think many of our listeners are aware I've spent 23 years of my life working abroad in Japan or throughout Asia, but of those kind of in and out of Asia, I did spend from 2014 until 2020 in China. So we have that similarity, but I was working with leadership teams just like I am here in America. That hasn't changed. Certainly the culture changed, but not that one. I'm now proud to say that I am banned in China. So one of the feathers in my cap for promoting these ideas of freedom and liberty and making your own choices, that kind of rubbed the Communist Party the wrong way. I've shared with people that I'm proud of two things. I'm on the Scientology enemies list, and I'm banned in China. So those are my two business awards.
Which part of China were you working in before you were
A
there?
large part of it actually was in, I was living in Hong Kong and then traveling in China
Yeah.
almost every week. So I've been all over China, and in terms of cuisine, in terms of slightly different cultures, and in terms of as an incredible country. And
Yeah.
in this lifetime, I won't understand Chinese culture, but I did learn a bit, and it was an incredible experience. I lived in a small city in China, Chengdu, which is 2.5 million people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's about 20 minutes by fast train from Guangzhou, so it's in that southeastern part of China,
Yeah, I
and
know it.
it's a lovely city. It's on a I had a penthouse on the river, and it's not a manufacturing city, by the way. It's mostly tourism, and it's beautiful, lovely place to live. And close enough to an airport, which is probably true for you and for me in terms of our lives. All we need is an airport within hailing distance. So.
That, this is so true. I'm interested, like, given that your exposure to China, when you kind of see China talked about on the news and you hear about some of the rivalry, the statements that come out of China, does it give you a different appreciation for how they're motivated and how they think strategically long term?
My experience is that it's an odd combination because they certainly are long term,
Yeah.
and which would our government here in America, I think, should pay more attention to that long term part of Chinese culture.
Yes.
At the
Yes.
same time, they are the most entrepreneurial people I've ever met.
Yeah.
The two things that I have as lodestones for my China experience is that, number one, most entrepreneurial company ever. My previous company in Asia, they copied over 3,000 times. 3,000 companies stole my stuff. They stole the content. You can go online in China, see our entire curriculum, see our lectures, see our experiential exercises, everything. Now, that doesn't mean you can do them really, but they're
Yeah.
there, at least they're there in writing. So they're very entrepreneurial. The other thing is a very low trust environment. They don't trust their friends. They don't trust their families. It's really amazing to me. Given their history, I understand
Yeah.
it. There's been a lot of betrayal in China for thousands of years. So it's an interesting, fascinating place. And of course, I think for many people, maybe many people think of China in a tourist way. And boy, there's a lot to see, a lot to
Yes.
experience. Incredible food, of course.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of opinions that are formed by the Chinese government, and
Yes.
the Chinese government is not China, in my experience. It's certainly powerful, but the Chinese people they're amazing, just
Yes.
absolutely amazing.
Yes. To your earlier point, I think the rest of the world needs to take note. They're moving fast and they've got a long-term game plan.
Yes, and when you look at compare the so the this failed train experiment in Cal The train experiment in California with what they've done with building fast trains all over China. But of course, they have no rules about the environment. They just build it.
Yeah.
And the good and bad are mixed there in equal measure, perhaps. So,
Agreed.
yeah.
Agreed.
So you're running something that's multi-location, a lot of different people. Tell me a
Yes.
little bit about your day. What are you looking at on a daily basis?
Yeah, so I'm about 100 days into this role, and so it might look a little bit different at the 100-day mark than it will do in the future, of course. So a lot of my day at the moment is spent on inputs from the organization because we're coming up with a growth plan for the next 3 to 5 years. We're focusing on what we know, who do we want to be and why, and how are we going to get there with our strategy, and what are some of the short-term tactics, and then obviously what are the organic growth projections across the different business units. So a lot of my day is trying to absorb a lot of data from customers, from suppliers, and from employees. To form the strategy that we go aggressively, cohesively. So that's how my day looks at the moment. It's really just listening and learning and meeting with the employees before we roll out this new strategy.
That idea of complexity and, for that matter, chaos seems to be coming up in a lot of the conversations I'm having with leaders.
Yeah.
But how do you deal with something that's as scattered? as what you're doing.
Yeah, it's a great question because you can easily get pulled in to the tactical transactional activities on the day to day. And your role in the seat as a CEO, one of your roles in the CEO is to make a few big decisions. It's like a handful of decisions that really move the needle. It's not the day to day like firefighting. And so it's a natural impulse for people like me, I would say. You see a problem, you go fix it. How do you, as a CEO, do you stay back? And I think that's one way of how you deal with that kind of complexity is you yourself remain restrained because you have to create the overarching strategy for the business. So what's the true north? Like, where do we want to be and why? Because if you have that compass constantly in front of yourself and your organization, that helps you rise above the complexity and the confusion, because this is the direction we're going. These are the strategic priorities to achieve there. Is what we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis in line with that strategy, or is it just a distraction? I'm a big reader of Michael Porter, and then he talks about strategy being what you don't do, like what you eliminate. And I think having that strategic discipline and focus and prioritizing your organization enables your leaders and the employees to be much more disciplined to say, look, this is just not important. The opportunity cost of focusing on A, B, and C is too high. It doesn't fit in with our strategy. So that's how I try to personally deal with it and then enable my organization to deal with it, is to give them that strong true north.
And what's your primary method of communication with your folks in all of these different locations?
Yeah, so I spend a good amount of time traveling to sites, and when I'm on site, I'll often do town halls. It's a chance for me to get inputs and also to update the organization. I do that mostly in person, but I often will do it virtually on a monthly basis as well. So I'll maybe have a quarterly town hall at each individual site, and monthly I'll do a virtual communication to the kind of the wider organization. Certainly in my first 100 days, and then periodically afterwards, I like to arrange kind of listening sessions where you get a small group of people, you try and create a safe environment, you get around the table, you try to break the ice about talking about family and sports, and you just try to get a sense of the mood of the organization and what's going on front lines. Because I suspect part of your underlying question is, how as a CEO do you still remain relevant and aware of what challenges your organization is facing? When it comes to my direct reports, we have weekly management meetings, and I have weekly one-to-ones, and then throughout the week, you occasionally have touch points based on what's going on in the business.
And how many people report directly to you? How do you manage that?
In my current organization, I have six direct reports, which I think is around the right level. I've had in other organizations that I've led many more reports than that, but I actually think five, six is a comfortable number because you've got to be able to be present and give them the attention they require. Personally, you want to make sure that they're in the right headspace to be successful, but also strategically, like what are the challenges that they're facing and how can I remove roadblocks for them?
One of my clients a few years ago had, it's probably more than a few years ago, had an extra ticket to one of these day-long e business events where there are a lot of different speakers. And one of them was for the late Colin Powell. He was a four-star general in the U.S. Army, and he also was Secretary of State, had these incredible life experiences. And I was so curious, just curious about him. I'd read a bit. I'd read one of his books, and so I was thrilled to get a free ticket. Plus, I had the ride up to this event space with my client, which is pretty special. He was a busy guy and hard to get time with. So we had driving there and coming back. That was wonderful. But one of the things about Powell's talk that so impressed me was he said, you have to go there. You
Yeah.
really have to go there. That in this time of using this technology, including the one we're using right now, or even just the telephone, email, chats, all of these things, that there's no substitute for being on the scene and sniffing and smelling and seeing and connecting in ways that go beyond your plan, perhaps. Have you discovered that in your first 100 days of getting to know your company and also having them get to know you?
Massively. Yeah. Also say that because you asked earlier about like where you made mistakes or vulnerabilities. I would say one of the things I've had to develop as a leader is the ability to be seen across multiple locations. You want a leader who you feel in some way is it cares about you and listens to you. And to do that, to your point, you have to be present. And so I've got much better at being present across locations as I've matured in my career. And so that leads me up to where I am now. And I spend a lot of time doing that. I can't describe it better than you just described it, repeating Colin Powell, but there are just things that you pick up on just by walking through the corridors, seeing what's on the boards, seeing what's on the dashboards, seeing what people are doing or not doing, walking through the factory and getting a sense for health and safety focus and things like that. There is just no way that you can pick up that vibe and a sense of the energy and the mood of the organization if you're remote. Now, you have to create some space for yourself to think strategically and to focus on the big initiatives. But in between there, I think time on site is massively valuable in both directions.
There's an old expression that I like, which is that everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Everybody wants the good things in life, but they want it to be a lot easier than it usually is. And I recall that I started an Asia-wide business, became the largest training company in Asia, and then ended up kinds of craziness happened, and I closed that company. But when I went back, I discovered that in China, 3,000 companies had, and the colloquial expression, stolen my stuff. They just copied it. And in China, what I discovered, and I think your experience there would bear this out, they don't consider it stealing at all.
No,
It's
just
a
good
very
business.
interesting, it's a very interesting thing. It's just business. And I have a reputation, right? So people would hire me to come in and help fix the stuff that they stole from me. It would be a simple way to say it. And in one case, I was referred to a training center in Changsha, China, and they did not become clients. And one of the reasons is I told them I want to physically come there and see what you're doing. And I had limited time between flights. And so I went there with an interpreter and went to their training center and sat down. And what I realized very quickly is they all brought out their notebooks, and it's like they wanted a 5-minute answer to all of their problems. And I was frustrated because there is a lot of cultural differences in communication, and I wasn't sure how to tell them that they were miles away from any kind of solutions to what was going on in their lives and business. And oh, and they, of course, they brought all kinds of people into the room. So it became almost like a seminar, and I had very limited time. And what I finally did was that when I walked in to their lobby and reception area, I looked around, and I'm guessing you would do the same thing from what you just said. And so I asked them all to stand up, march them into the reception area, and they, like many training centers in China, had pictures of graduating classes covering an entire wall. And yeah, okay, they love these group pictures. And I said, "Would you please look at that wall?" They're looking at me like I'm crazy. And I said, "What do you see?" And they said, "Pictures of graduations and smiling faces and all that." So I said, "Do you notice that all of the frames are crooked? There isn't even one that's a reference point." And that notion of walking the halls and noticing and using those clues
Yes.
to work with people, it's something that I wish I would have known when I was younger, I think. I would be a statement I would make. But it has served me well, is look for little physical examples of the point I'm trying to make.
It's spot on. I mentioned I've had to develop that and mature that in my career. I think the reason is when early on in my career, like you get sucked into kind of board presentations and trade discussions and customer topics. And it's not that you don't want to, you just quickly get pulled into executive type discussions. And now I absolutely force myself. It's become, quite frankly, it's become natural now. I absolutely get a kick out of it for all the reasons you've described. But I had to force myself to like create time every morning to go walk the factory floor before I got sucked into the meetings. Because before you know it, you look up and it's 7 p.m., right? And everyone's gone home. So I forced myself, and now it's become a natural state. And it's for the reasons that you mentioned. You just pick up on so much And in return, the organization gets to see that someone's caring about their health and safety, because that's often what I look for, but other things as well. So I completely agree with you.
I know that learning experiences are what it's all about for many of us that are running companies. Have you had anywhere the learning was painful and where you got the learning, but along the way it was not so easy?
What the statement. It's not what it's people don't remember what you said, they remember how you made them feel. I would say early on in my career, I probably would too frequently win the argument, win the debate, having not picked my battles widely, horizontally and vertically, and not realizing it didn't really matter that I was right. And it was more important, not that I was intellectually or logically or strategically correct, or but how I made them feel in that moment. And I think you often see people with a good amount of talent strategically, intellectually, kind of in terms of work rate, but they don't quite grow the career in the way they could have done. And it's because that EQ, that people skills is just not never quite developed. And so I think I have had good success, but I certainly learned in my late 20s, early 30s that lesson in a hard way. And I realized, okay, not having to win every debate, particularly with your manager, and making sure that they'll remember how you feel, not what you said, I think was a lesson learned.
Yes.
Absolutely, for sure.
Yeah, it's not what you say. It's not the structure. It's not the pay. It's more about, and particularly, I think in Western developed democracies now, people are looking for meaning and purpose in their lives. And part of that is a feeling that they're cared for and listened to. And that's that we had in companies I founded and led, we had over 1 million graduates. And so you start thinking everything. And then Daniel Goleman comes out with his book on the emotional quotient, on EQ, on the social side of learning. And I remember, because I'm a petty person sometimes, just sometimes, David, I remember being so upset that he would, in effect, steal my stuff, that I could have written that book. The difference was he had done the research. And boy, it's just an overwhelming amount of evidence that the attention that we give to how we make other people feel, and it's a dance, because you can't actually make them feel anything, but you can open a space for that to happen. And I think that's part of maturing as a person and as a business, particularly in business, is learning to pay attention to how people are feeling around you. And to realize you've got something to do with that. Something. Not everything. They still have a choice, but they've got something. Look, you've jumped into a big task and you're only 3 months in. So I'm in awe that you would t spend this time with us. What do you see for your future? What's the near term and longer term for your company?
So, near term, we have to finish this breakthrough strategy and then align the entire organization around executing it aggressively. And I'm a big believer that once I've seen so many companies that come up with a strategy, they stick it on the wall, they stick it on the presentation, and then it just disappears. And then if you were to go around to people and say, "What's our strategy? What's our vision?" And so for me right now, it's making sure that doesn't happen. We get all the inputs from customers, suppliers, employees. We get everyone's fingerprints on it. So we're collaborative on the inputs, but on the outputs, we execute and we execute with discipline, and it becomes part of our DNA. So that's certainly the short-term priorities. The long-term priorities is to create value for people who have a stake in our business, employees and people on the board and shareholders.
There's a lot of wisdom in that. And most of the work that I do is on the side of that purpose, vision, values, true north stuff, getting people clear about foundational ideas. And I really admire people that pay, after they do that, realize that execution is everything. You're young enough perhaps to not know this name, but when IBM, the giant computer company, was in serious trouble about 20 years ago, a guy named Gerstner was hired from the outside to become the CEO of IBM and to do a turnaround. And of course, you have to do the interviews, right? Your board expects it. the media presses on you, all of that stuff. And he did that, and he got frustrated one day and blurted out the truth. He said, "We have enough purpose, vision, and values. We need to execute. We need to go out and get it done." And I've learned a lot in recent years from the work the this guy named Gino Workman. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he wrote a book called Traction. And it's become a kind of a little bit of a Bible for me, and I've actually stolen a bit from it to incorporate into our work. But it's about execution, about actually running the company in a very practical sense. And I really admire the way he thinks. He's obviously had been there and done that. And so at this kind of later stage in my life, I'm paying more attention to execution and to learning about it, learning theories behind it, and how to actually get it done. So I think you're on the right track if my
No, I love that's where your head is at as well. At the end of we did a strategy workshop recently where we brought in a lot of employees from a lot of locations, and it was quite a grueling couple of days for everybody. And one of my closing comments was that was the easy part, because the hard part is now executing, to your point. And we're thinking very much about what are the KPIs that we can monitor on a daily, weekly, monthly basis that keeps us in that formation, that makes that ensures we're holding ourselves accountable to the strategy and to the tactics that you come up with. But you're right, it's the easy part is ideas. The hard part is execution from top to bottom, left to right, across the organizations. They're all mobilized around that breakthrough strategy.
And that, and working with people, and particularly in doing this podcast and listening to leaders in a lot of different fields, there are a lot of catchphrases that get publicized around and in business books, particularly, or seminars that we go to. And the idea of a dashboard is one of those. And I've noticed that a lot of people treat it kind of like it's another fad. I really find that having something that's deep enough so that you're paying attention to the right things, but also is narrowly focused, and that you don't pay attention to too much detail in your in that dashboarding. Getting that adjusted just right seems to be key to a positive future. And so I really identify with where you are in terms of figuring out how am I going to really have an impact here. So that's terrific. David, this has been a fun conversation, and one that I think anybody that listens will learn from. How can do you have any requests of my listeners? Are there things you're looking for, things you're up to that, and how would people get in touch with you if they wanted to?
They can get in contact with me via LinkedIn. It's David Hewitt, Charlotte, North Carolina. That's CEO. That's probably the best keywords to type in to find me. I'm happy to provide any insights that people might want, and vice versa. I might learn from people who reach out as well, which is always good. No specific requests for anybody listening, other than don't be afraid to admit you don't know, and don't be afraid to show you don't have all the answers. Lean on those in your team. Lean on those in your community and your support network. It might be you, Robert, for example. The idea that you shouldn't have all the answers as the CEO is, to me, is silly. And I think if you have that humility and self-awareness to know that you don't know it all, and you build a good team around you and a good network around you that can balance out your inexperiences or your lack of skills, and you lean on those, that's authentic leadership. And so that would be not a request, but an encouragement to people.
You live in a lovely area in North Carolina. And of course, as an immigrant, I'm sure you by now have heard the two expressions that I think have to guide you. One is bless your heart, which has multiple meanings.
Yes, I've heard that one.
It might mean truly blessings to you and all those good things. It could also mean I'm really not listening to you, but I'm polite, something like that. But the other one is pray for me. And maybe what we can do for you is hold you in a positive spirit as you take on these challenges. David, thank you for today. I appreciate the investment of your time, your energy, and your intelligence. And let me know if I can support you in any way. It'd be my great pleasure.
Thanks, Robert. I enjoyed the conversation.
Have a great day. Thanks so much for joining us for Conversations with Achievers. If you or someone you know would make a good guest for this weekly show, the details are at therobertwhite.com and click on podcasts. I'm looking for businessmen and women with a story to tell, stories that might benefit other owners and executives. If you got some value from this program, I'd really appreciate you sharing about it on social media and just mentioned www.therobertwhite.com/podcast. Of course, subscribing means you won't miss a show, and rating the podcast positively will leave Robert smiling. I'm building a movement here for leaders, leaders who want to succeed in business, succeed with their families, have fun, and contribute toward making the world a better place. It's special to me that you chose to listen. I look forward to connecting again next week. Remember, reach out to me anytime with any questions or concerns at therobertwhite.com. Bye for now.